Your Central Minnesota Farm Report for a Saturday morning. I'm CASM Radio Farm Director Joe Gill. It's brought to you by Midsota Trailer Sales and Service in Avon. This week, we speak to Amanda Billick, Senior Public Policy Director with the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, recapping a very interesting 2022 session.
Yeah, well, good to see that one of the pieces that did get done was a supplemental agriculture finance bill, which really did also include the drought pieces that have been talked about for, gosh, nearly a year now. So good that that was also included, and that bill also did include a pretty large expansion of some funding for broadband, another priority for a lot of rural communities. So good to see that, but as you had mentioned, there were a lot of pieces that were left undone. One of the pieces that, you know, we were watching really closely and working on with a lot of the other agriculture groups was the tax bill. And there was, you know, agreement on some of those provisions in the tax bill. There were some good things that were added for agriculture. But it remains to be seen if they're going to come into a special session to sort of finish some of these undone pieces, or if it would just be something that's going to wait for the next legislature.
You mentioned the drought bill. How the drought perspective or relief of the bill. How did that kind of morph as the session went along? Did it end up better, you feel, at the end than where it was proposed at the beginning?
Yeah, so with the drought bill, we had always been supporting it because it was something that we know was really important to a lot of our livestock organizations and livestock partners. And so there wasn't anything specifically that was in there for corn, but we always were supportive of it because of the need for livestock. So initially, you know, they had been proposing about, you know, $10 million for just sort of the ag portion of it. There was a provision in the House that was added on, adding some drought assistance for DNR, and that it was essentially for sort of some tree planting and tree seedlings that needed to be replanted following the drought. And that was coming in at about $13 million on the DNR portion. So, you know, the bill that was coming out of the House felt a little out of balance for thinking about the need that was out there for agriculture versus what was in there for the DNR for trees. And in the end, you know, what we did see is, you know, the grants for the livestock and specialty crop producers got raised from $5,000 up to $7,500 for a total maximum grant, but then also you know, the portion was $8.1 million is where it ended. There was also another $2.5 million that was transferred from the general fund to the Rural Finance Authority. They have a revolving loan account that really has a priority for drought relief loans. So that was great. And then also as a part of that, too, there was money in that drought bill that was also helping to respond to some of the various livestock and animal disease pieces that we're dealing with in Minnesota and trying to have a little bit more with the prevention. So $1.5 million that was going into the agriculture emergency account, and then also another $1 million for the veterinary diagnostic lab at the University of Minnesota, which was also a priority for several livestock groups that we were also helping to support.
There seemed to be a few elements focused on that, kind of like research and such. Maybe it was, is that status quo or is that maybe new?
Some of those, I mean, it's responding a little bit, especially with avian influenza and making sure the department has enough money. The need for the vet diagnostic lab and updating some of that equipment has been there for a little while, and so really trying to get that funding out of the legislature this year was really critical to make sure that the university and others have the tools to be able to respond to some of these emerging and new animal diseases.
I know E15 was a huge top priority heading into session, and what kind of effects went into the session where, you know, maybe things didn't get where we wanted to be and have that as a standard here in the state? What all played a role in that?
Yeah, so it has been, you know, with E15, we, along with several of our partners, have been working on trying to get Minnesota to move from our 10% standard up to our 15%. It's just a really good opportunity. It's a good time to be able to do that, especially with where gas prices are at right now, and especially where we see that when E15 is offered by retailers, and we have nearly 420 now in Minnesota that are offering higher blends, including E15, you know, consumers see a savings of anywhere from 5 to 40 cents compared to just regular unleaded 87 gasoline. So, but one of the things that kind of, you know, works against that is when it is a standard, and so we've been working with the Petroleum Marketers Association, because what they're concerned about is if they're essentially their, you know, their members are told that they must be carrying E15, there is a cost for some of the infrastructure upgrades that need to happen for being able for that retailer to be able to offer E15. And so they've always been concerned and worried about what the cost is going to be to the retailer at a time when there's a lot of sort of pressure on them, and they might not get any more business by being able to sell higher blends. So we actually worked this past session to really kind of come up with an agreement with the Petroleum Marketers Association around a new funding source, a more stable, longer-term funding source that would assist retailers for being able to get some of the resources that they need to be able to replace and upgrade their equipment to offer higher blends of ethanol. Although, you know, we were able to come to agreement, we probably came to agreement a little bit too late for some of the committee deadlines to really sort of push that bill through. And I think the other piece that was a little bit of a challenge with that agreement was in order to create this new longer-term funding source, you know, we have to have a source of funding that helps to provide that. And so what the retailers had proposed was a small fee increase on the wholesale side of fuels of 1.3 cents. And that would go into a dedicated fund, and then the retailer would go through and do the equipment upgrades that would be necessary, and then they would submit to the Department of Commerce a reimbursement request for up to 65% of the total project cost. But given where gas prices are at and fuel prices were at, looking at even having a small nominal fee that would be added at the wholesale level was really a difficult piece to sort of overcome. But I really feel good that we have a good agreement with the retailers, and I think we're able to make some progress next session on really this infrastructure funding side. And we have the commitment from some legislators to work on that next year in the next legislative session.
No, it seems like, too, we're going to have a bit of a changing of the guard, seeing many long-term senior legislators leaving St. Paul beginning next year.
Yeah, we're losing a lot of institutional knowledge and a lot of strong champions for agriculture, but we also know that there have been other legislators that have been elected in the last couple of cycles, and some of the candidates that are out there running are also going to be strong champions for agriculture. We were just kind of going over some of the maps and the districts and the filings yesterday as we sort of plan at the Corn Grower some of our candidate engagement efforts for the campaign cycle throughout the summer and into the fall. And I think we were looking, and maybe we're up to between the House and the Senate, 51 retirements between the House and the Senate. And out of a total body of 201 legislators, that's quite a turnover for redistricting election year.
You mentioned next session, you feel like there's some momentum there. And I'm not sure if it was April or May where we had Governor Walz and, what, seven other governors kind of come together, too. Is that a positive piece of the pie as well, where they're looking to push E15 permanently?
Absolutely, and that was another piece that we worked on with Governor Walz and with some of the other Midwestern governors as well to sort of put that request into EPA, because we have been working on, at the federal level, too, a legislative solution. Congressman Craig has had a E15 year-round access bill that she has co-authored and has been picking up lots of co-authors. So there could be that congressional fix to ensure permanent year-round E15, but also really felt the need that we needed to have another sort of solution as a backup. And so this effort by the seven Midwestern governors in submitting this request to EPA to basically allow them to sort of waive some of those reed vapor requirements in their states, which is eligible under the Clean Air Act, does provide an opportunity for making sure that we would have a permanent solution in place for the 2023 driving season. The waiver that was extended by President Biden and the EPA for this driving season was really essential in making sure that there was not going to be a disruption in sales for this upcoming driving season. And then we need to make sure that we have that fix in place for 2023. And it's really important for Minnesota. You know, there's about 2,300 stations nationwide that carry E15, but we have nearly 400. We have 420 of those stations in Minnesota. We've always been a leader in the amount of retailers and the amount of locations that offer E15 as well as E85. And so making sure that we had year-round access to those sales was really an important aspect for Minnesota in particular.
Senior Public Policy Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Corn Growers, Amanda Billick, joining us this week on your Central Minnesota Farm Report.